On the air presented by SNY. My name is James Flippin. You can follow me on Twitter at James_Flippin. And I echo the thoughts of Mets Nation when I say, what a shame that we never had a chance to watch 2015 with Harvey, DeGrom, and Wheeler. Anyway, we'll have to go through without, and the Mets have the pitching staff and the depth to weather it in short order. Perhaps not to the same elite potential level that those three, that triumvirate, could have provided the Mets in 2015. Instead, it'll be Dylan G, and he'll make out that fifth spot in the rotation as the Mets soldier on without yet another victim of Tommy John surgery. Taking your calls all night at 347-996-3165. We go up until 10 o'clock Eastern Daylight Savings Time, and we get closer to the end of spring training, the start of the Major League campaign, rapidly approaching. It's almost March Madness time, so you know it's not long for serious baseball. And the Mets are now, of course, without their potential third ace, you know, high-level rotation pitcher, whatever you want to call it. And a lot of people are throwing around blame, naturally thinking, is there some sort of a trend that can be empirically linked to the Mets and this Tommy John Reaper? So when it comes to guys on the Mets that have had Tommy John surgery, you've got, of course, Matt Harvey. We know about him. Jacob DeGrom, you may not know, already had Tommy John surgery. Steven Matz, a name that now takes on more importance with Zach Wheeler out of the picture for all of 2015. Steven Matz, a Stony Brook, Long Island native, a kid who's going to start in AAA and be on a quick order with the telephone call to Las Vegas as a potential option for those Mets. He had the Tommy John surgery. And, you know, a second Tommy John surgery, far from uncommon. As a baseball fan, you almost start to wonder, you know, what's next with the Tommy John? And who's going to be next to have it? And it becomes kind of akin to almost getting your tonsils out. And, you know, to me, and feel free, call me up here. Let me know your thoughts at 347-996-3165. It's Mets on the air. Your calls all night. But there's no way you can blame the Mets for the Tommy John thing. And Wheeler's agent came out recently and said, you know, you can't blame the Mets, which, by the way, thank Mr. Met that he did, because I can only imagine what a PR disaster that would have been if his agent came out and said, well, you know, I think there's something to concerns over how the Mets handled this. And I'm ready to hear from any Mets fans who feel differently. You know, if you blame the Mets, then call up and share why, share how. You know, let's hear your evidence. And we'll get to a Sports Illustrated piece that I read today that blames the Mets. And maybe your argument is tied to pitch count. But when you really get down to it, no one has a clue with this Tommy John stuff. And like so many things that we as Mets fans know when it comes to, you know, being a fan, the Mets are unlucky with it. Most Tommy Johns for the Mets since 2005, 10-year period, 24 Tommy John surgeries overall. And I read this article today, like I said, this Sports Illustrated piece that basically, you know, if only subtly, blames the Mets and their handling of the situation as far as why this happened with Wheeler. And, you know, they cite pitch counts and going over 100 pitches before the seventh inning and a jump of 16 and two-thirds innings from 2013 to 2014. And, you know, listen, the thing about baseball is, and pitching specifically, it's not a natural motion. It's a very unnatural motion to sling your arm forward, overhand, in such a violent fashion, flinging a small, tiny object like that. And when you throw in the torque, put on your elbow with the slider, with the certain kind of curveball, it's only a matter of time that UCL, which you can almost imagine like a rubber band in your arm, before it snaps. And a guy like Zach Wheeler, growing up in Georgia, I'm sure played baseball pretty darn well near year round. Better pitchers, I'm sure, in his age group, in his region, for most of his life. I mean, you're fighting against nature with pitching. And pitchers have had trouble with UCLs or a bad elbow or whatever as long as people have played baseball. And Tommy John surgeries, I think it was last week. Jake Brown was with me, not Luke Halpert. So I think it was last week I mentioned that fact that there's been more Tommy John surgeries. There was more Tommy John surgeries in 2014 than in all of the 1990s. And there's a reason for that. It's because it's an option now. You know, back in the day when guys busted their elbow, their UCL, and they would have had, in the modern sense, Tommy John surgery, it wasn't an option. So there was a few different things you could do. Not pitch. Pitch with the pain and try to do as well as you possibly could. I said a few. I was wrong. It's really two. That's what it used to be. And, you know, I think for years, the only thing I can think of in terms of the epidemic that is Tommy John surgeries is pitchers used to pitch through it. Pitchers used to pitch with partially torn UCLs and possibly even fully torn UCLs all the time. I know, Sandy Koufax obviously had arthritis, they say, of the elbow. He probably had a torn UCL. I mean, does anybody know that he didn't? How many guys for the 60, 70, 100 years, pretty much, that Tommy John surgery wasn't an option? How many guys would have gotten Tommy John? And, you know, shoot, forget actually still being able to pitch. Maybe some guys would have just pitched better. There's a reason everybody's getting Tommy John surgery, and it's because it's an option now. You know, pitching requires depth, and even in a pitching-rich era, like the era that is 2015 Major League Baseball, you need starting pitching depth. And in terms of not pitching Dylan G, I saw somebody tweet, and by the way, you can follow me on Twitter, @James_Flippin. This is Mets on the Air, presented by SNY. We're going to get to your phone calls in just a second, I promise. 347-996-3165. 347-996-3165. And I've got some other tweets that I'll look at later in the evening. But I saw this tweet that basically said, oh, you know, now the Mets are going to feel so self-righteous, kind of, you know, not having traded Dylan G. And, you know, they look so smart because they didn't get rid of him with Wheeler's injury now. And, it's like, really? That's the kind of snark that you're going to throw around with the Zach Wheeler injury, you know, mocking the fact that they might actually be able to overcome that? I don't get that. I really struggle with that level of vitriol. And, you know, is Dylan G Zach Wheeler? No. Dylan G is going to be, hopefully, a serviceable guy. First of all, no lack of health risk in his own right. You know, Noah Syndergaard, Steven Matz. Matter of fact, if Noah Syndergaard doesn't pitch at the major league level this season, I think you have to consider that a major disappointment. Major disappointment, considering Zach Wheeler's injury. Of course, you know, logically you realize there's no way you're going to get through the season, all the way through the season with that five-man rotation. But if Zach Wheeler never goes down, then you say, okay, you know what? Maybe there's a scenario where Noah Syndergaard takes strides this year, but he still doesn't pitch at the major league level. Not anymore. Now, Noah Syndergaard has to pitch at the major league level at some point this season. Artie is in Astoria. Artie, what's going on? You're on Mets on the Air.
How you doing, James? We're calling from Astoria. I'm feeling like we just we need to be moving forward here.
Yeah, my fault. Artie, you're gonna have to say that again. I apologize. I had the volume down on my computer.
No problem, James. How you doing? I'm just thinking we got a big year coming here. This is a great year. We can't get tied up with this Wheeler injury. I think it's time for Mats. I think it's time for Syndergaard. Let's get him up here. Let's give him a shot. You know, we don't know what we're gonna get from G coming off last year's injury. Let's get these two guys up here and let's go get this thing.
Well, you know what, Artie? I really appreciate your enthusiasm. And you know what? I feel largely the same way. There's no denying that this is a loss of significant proportion for the Mets in terms of what they were trying to do this year and that potential three-man, you know, top of the order combination there. But no, you know, Steven Matz, I think to a slightly lesser extent, not to say that I like his stuff any less, but I just think in terms of their development and all that, you know, Noah Syndergaard's probably the more likely immediate option. So I just hope he does well. But yeah, no, the young kids, and throw Rafael Montero in there as well, who obviously got a chance to start last year. They're going to have to step up here. And, you know,
we were just down there at spring training. This is going to be a good ball club. We're going to be able to get this done. We can do this without Wheeler. We got some good arms. We're going to make this happen. You have a great night, James.
Thanks, Artie. I appreciate it. And that's Artie from Astoria. Always good to hear from somebody out there in the borough where obviously it all goes down. And yeah, you know, listen, like I said, those young pitchers are going to have to make an impact. And to what extent they do probably depends as much as anything on, you know, how Dylan G does, for example. And of course, his role takes on more immediate import, being a part of that starting rotation now. Paul's in Pennsylvania. What's up, Paul?
Hey, hi, James. How are you? Good to talk to you again.
Good to talk to you too, man. What's on your mind?
Yeah, you can't get into the blame game. The Mets have enough pitching. They don't have to worry about Wheeler. Maybe Wheeler come back. Someone said 12-96 or 12-100. Who knows? You know.
Well, you know, it's funny, man. Yeah. The level of concern definitely isn't what it used to be with those elbow injuries. It's still, you know, it's not getting your tonsils out. I think I said that already. It almost feels like that, but yeah, it's a fact of life in modern baseball. And there's a reason why you cultivate that starting pitching depth, but go ahead.
Yeah. Let me get this a couple of points quickly. Who's the leadoff hitter?
Well, that depends on, your ability to foresee the future and what Terry Collins is going to put on that lineup card. The buzz at this point is that it's going to be the center fielder, Juan Lagares, but, you know, that's certainly not set in stone. And I think that's still likely to shift around over the course of the season, unless Lagares really kind of takes it and runs with it, which, you know, so far this spring training, which of course is not really much of a judge at all, unfortunately, he's done okay up there, you know, drawing walks and stuff like that. You know, he has to take big steps with his offensive game in terms of his ability to be patient and not rush the at-bat and all that kind of thing. So that's, you know, true no matter where he bats. So could he profile as a guy who bats in the leadoff spot? Sure. You know, I think that right now that's the guy they're going to go with.
Yeah. I heard a rumor that Familia lost velocity on his fastball.
Well, you know, apparently Keith Hernandez was really kind of like, you know, going on about that. And, you know, obviously we've all watched baseball games on SNY and we know the way Keith goes on about things and sometimes exaggerates. And I love him for it. I mean, it's hilarious and it's great TV most of the time. But apparently it was a little bit of a slow gun. Even if Familia wasn't throwing, you know, the usual octane that he typically pours over the plate, I wouldn't be worried about it because, again, in spring training, who knows to what extent he's not, you know, fully airing it out or whatever. But somebody did say, oh, no, you know, it was a slow gun. That sort of tends to happen here. It's not like they're totally set up with the full TV production that they have during the regular season. So it could be much ado about nothing. But, you know, it's always a concern. I mean, listen, anytime you hear about any sort of velocity dip or arm soreness or, you know, it starts to feel like here we go again, I think everybody just has to kind of buckle in and get used to that.
Yeah, and who's going to be the left-handed reliever?
Well, that's also up for grabs. You know, the guy for the Rule 5 pick, Sean Gilmartin, out of the Twins organization, he's a possibility. You know, there's other guys like Daryl Alvarez who like remains him. An option.
I think he's good.
Yeah, I mean, you know, to be honest with you, Paul, I don't worry a whole lot about – I'm glad you actually brought that up because that's something I wanted to talk about in the second half of the show, the left-handed reliever spot. I really think that's not that big a deal either because when you really get down to it, you have guys in the bullpen that represent more consistent spots like a Hanmer Mejia, like a Vic Black who hopefully looks like he's okay after having his MRI or whatever. Bobby Parnell, when he's ready to fully go, he's held lefties to a good – pretty, you know, low average over his career. So, you know, when you have guys that you think are actually pretty good in the bullpen, I don't worry as much about the lefty righty thing. You know, it's kind of, I don't know.
I even like Buddy Carlisle. I think he's good.
Yeah, Buddy Carlisle. He certainly stands to possibly make the club at this point. You know, he has to be considered an option.
Long relief.
Yep. If not him, maybe Rafael Montero. But yeah, no, Paul. Listen, that kind of thing is definitely something that they're going to have to figure out because everything gets thrown into question with these injuries, and that's part of spring training, you know.
Yeah, I got one more point. This kid Rosario at shortstop. How far is he away from the major leagues?
A couple of years. He's pretty far. Okay. I mean, he's a guy that they think is probably good enough that they don't want to rush his arbitration clock and. You know, he's still a little bit green. He's a baby at this point. But yeah, they like him a lot. They do like him a lot. You know, that's part of the future for him at some point. So appreciate it, Paul. Good to hear from you, man. Don't be a stranger. Chris is in Milford. What's up, Chris?
Hey, what's up, James?
How you doing?
Hey, what a difference a week makes.
Yeah, well, you know, such is the life of a Mets fan, right? It's never for lack of interest, that's for sure. Right.
Hey, I was just wondering, do you think, you know, if you look at the same scenarios, let's say the Mets are, you know, around 500, maybe a little bit above, you know, around the All-Star break just after it, you know, do you think they've scrapped the idea of maybe looking to trade to improve this team without that extra pitcher? Or do you think, you know, they'd still be in the same mode of do whatever they can to, you know, make the team better, even without Wheeler here to.
Well, you know, I'll tell you what, Chris, I actually, believe it or not, I was sort of allowing my mind to wander while sitting in traffic today. You know, I was driving home from work and I was thinking, you know, and it's kind of an annual rite of any baseball fan, I guess, that you start to think about, you know, if your team could really be something that year, if you could somehow be in contention and if the specter of playoff baseball could be a thing come August and all that kind of stuff. And I thought, you know, the Mets, much like any other team, I really think should not ever really be in a mode of, oh, we're really going to go for it. We're putting all our chips into the table and all that kind of thing. You know, I'm a big fan of where I think the organization is headed right now, which is really trying to build up depth and the ability to overcome injury and the ability to overcome underperforming assets and all that kind of a thing. And, you know, making trades is going to have to be considered an option for a team like this because they have a strong farm system. That's always going to be an option. And even the great farm systems of recent memory have always been good about making trades and using that asset in that way. But, you know, I think that the injury to Wheeler, to be honest with you, I don't think it makes a big difference in that respect. Because as much as it hurts the team to lose him, you know, the whole point of a baseball team is no one guy. Outside of maybe if you really want to look at it, you know, the Marlins in the division, obviously with Giancarlo Stanton, you know, it's a team game. And the Mets have that starting pitching depth for a reason. They didn't trade Dylan G for a reason. And, you know, unfortunately it happened this way. It's like Dylan G said, he's not happy that he's back in the starting rotation as a result of an injury. But, you know, it's where he prefers to pitch. He's ready to answer the bell. And, you know, we'll see what kind of thing he can do this year because obviously he's had his moments in the past, you know, despite not having that same repertoire that obviously a Zach Wheeler does. So, you know, I don't think, to answer your question in a roundabout fashion, that the, you know, Wheeler injury really impacts their organizational strategy at this point.
Do you think somebody like Syndergaard, do you think his, you know, starting his, you know, ARB clock has any, it will have any, like, bearing on whether or not he could start the season at the major league level, or do you think?
To be honest with you, I think it probably does. You know, I think that all things considered, and I don't necessarily know this, you know, I don't know enough about the situation with Noah Syndergaard or whatever, but, you know, all things considered, you might consider putting Syndergaard in that fifth spot and saying, you know what, I kind of think he's just a better pitcher at the end of the day than Dylan G is. You know, the scouting reports and what you hear about Noah Syndergaard kind of makes you wonder if that might not be the case, despite the age difference and experience gap and all that. But the financial aspect of it is real. And if Noah Syndergaard hangs out in AAA until May, and at that point, you know, Dylan G is pitching in some mid-4 ERA, you know, then they might decide to make a change at that point. But yeah, I think to answer your question there, yes, it probably does make an impact.
I wonder, and, you know, I think Mats is probably past Syndergaard at this point in the Mets' eyes as far as, you know, who they really would like to, if they had their druthers, who they'd really rather have up here join this rotation. They may think he's one more year away, but I don't know if, you know, they just have more faith in what Mats can bring to this team than what Syndergaard would. I think if the deal came up, I think they just assume deal Syndergaard and keep Mats.
You might be right. You might be right. I mean, the thing about Mats is, and as simplistic a fact as it is, he's lefty. And, you know, they have a longer shelf life for a reason in Major League Baseball, those southpaws, you know, and they have a certain level of value that even the right-handed prospect that breathes fire like Noah Syndergaard potentially doesn't. And obviously, yeah. Mats doesn't, you know, he's no chump with his fastball himself. So,
well, I'll tell you, watching him, you know, I've seen him once or twice in the last week pitch, and I'd asked you last week about a comp between he and Kazmir.
Kazmir.
I'll tell you, I had no idea how big Mats was. He is a big boy.
Yeah, you know, he's a good athlete. He's a former first-round pick, local kid. You know, you got to be excited about Steven Matt. I mean, here's the thing. It's almost like that whole, you know, aspect of college football, if you're a college football fan. You know, the injuries that happen, is as much of a shame as those injuries are, it's like, okay, who's going to take that spot now?
Yeah.
You know, who's going to be the guy that steps up and takes that spot now? And, you know, it remains to be seen. Obviously, Dylan G is the immediate answer. But, you know, there's a lot of other names that clamor for that spot at this point.
Yeah.
All right, Chris. Good talking
Thanks
to you, buddy.
A lot, James.
We'll chat again soon, I'm sure. That's Chris in Milford, good friend of the radio program. 347-996-3165. 347-996-3165. Just about near the halfway point on Mets on the Air here on the 18th of March. If you're listening to the podcast, I appreciate you doing so. And please check out sny.tv for more Mets audio content in iTunes. We've got some audio from Sandy Alderson, a press conference, not a press conference, really a conference call that he did earlier in the week, and reacting to the Wheeler injury. So we'll listen to some of that audio, but let's stick with the phone lines for now. Again, 347-996-3165. We'll get your call in before the end of the program at 10 o'clock Eastern Daylight Time. Thomas is in New Brunswick. What's up, Thomas?
Hi, how's it going?
Good.
Yeah.
How's my fellow Garden Stater? What's going on?
All right. You know what? I love the show. I listen to every Wednesday. The show is very, it gives great information. But sometimes I have a problem where I feel like you defending the the ownership sometimes. There's a report that they are looking at all the pitchers instead of looking for the pitcher of the Orioles, the lefty. What his name?
Brian Mattis.
Yes. Because he may because of what he makes or something like that. They're looking on Dana Evelyn to bring him back.
I think they're looking at him too because they think he's a good pitcher. I mean, they need a left-handed pitcher in their bullpen, really. I mean, in theory, anyway. Again, like I said before, I think they can handle it with the right-handers they have out there. But yeah, no, they're looking into Mattis. Okay, go ahead, and sure. We'll get to the issue of the whole defending ownership thing. I disagree, but that's fine. We can talk about that. Go ahead.
Yeah, this is a concern for me. I think they're going to have a good year this year. And I think they're going to be in the hunt. But what I'm afraid is that honestly, it's not going to put the effort to bring somebody on the trade deadline to help them out. That's what I'm afraid of.
Well, here's the thing, though. Here's the thing, Thomas. This is what I'll say. I think that the thing I've been consistent about with the Wilpons is that they're willing to take risks. It's just that they struggle when those risks don't necessarily pan out. We've seen signings, plenty of free agency signings, that didn't work out for a variety of reasons, but they spent the money in the first place. You know, we've seen trade deadline deals. I mean, I was just talking to somebody the other day about when they traded, Jeff Kent for, Carlos Baerga and Alfredo Espinoza. I mean, they've made deadline deals. Scott Kazmir, we just talked about that. You know, they traded for Victor Zambrano and they picked up Peterson and the other guy from the Pirates. So some prospect. So yeah, I mean they've been active in the past. I mean, I get this is a different general manager and a different management team, but you know, I think if the opportunity's there, I think they would strike.
Oh, I hope so, because I used to go to about 50 games. And now I'm cutting it down to 5-10 games a year, and it really hurt.
Listen, I don't mean to cut you off, Thomas. But when was it that you were going to 50 games? I mean, how long ago did you go to 50 games?
Well, 2006, 2007.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, listen, I went to a lot more games during the Shea Stadium era myself, to be perfectly honest with you, and I'm just being real about that. You know, I don't get out to as many games now that it's Citi Field. Maybe it's the age difference, the schedule that I have now. You know, being less satisfied with the product certainly has a lot to do with it. No question about that. But I think that where my so-called defense of the ownership comes into play, I just appreciate where I think the organization is headed. And what I think that is a model of sustainability, not going all in or potentially even putting together a team as dominant or potentially dominant as 2006, but a team that has a model of sustainability. And I'm okay with that because, you know, whether I watch the games on TV or I get out there to Citi Field, I know what I'm going to be doing most of my summer nights. And, with this team, I'd rather they have at least a shot most of the time. And I feel that way going into this season, whereas I had not previously. So I don't think it's as much about ownership, although sports always comes down to that. I think for me, it's just I like the way this rebuild is at least shaping up. We'll see. We'll see now.
Yes. I hope so, because I agree with you. I think they're going to have a lot of chips that they could sustain for a lot of years, having a good thing, I think so, because they have a lot of good young players in the farm system.
Yeah, they've got a highly rated farm system now. And listen, that's not the be-all or end-all. Obviously, these kids have to come up and make an impact at the major league level. They have to do it at the show, as they say. But, you know, you spread the risk around when you have a better farm system, and it's not all about just the one prospect, like Lasting's Millage or Jay Payton or Alex Ochoa or whoever you want to throw out there. So, Thomas, good to talk to you, buddy. I appreciate it. Don't be a stranger, all right?
Okay, thank you.
All right, Tom, have a good one. That's Tom, a fellow Garden Stater. So that's let's go across the Outer Borough Bridge or no, the what's the bridge, Dave? to get from Staten Island, New Jersey. Verrazano. Yeah. So Dave is in Staten Island. What's up, Dave?
Hey, James. How you doing? Listen, just want to make a few points if you allow me to. I mean, I respect what you're saying, and I think you're a very well-accomplished host, and I love your insight, but I got to be honest. I'm sick and tired of the Wilpons getting away with murder. And honestly, this is the way I feel, and maybe I'm speaking the minority, but I feel as soon as Wheeler went down, number one, I look at it as a blow, okay? Because whether you have the depth or not, I believe it's like they say, you always can't have enough pitching. So maybe in that respect, I'll get all the same side. But you know what? There's no reason that they should have bat an eyelash to go after a quality left-handed pitcher or bring a starter in. You know, make a move, because the fans should not have to sit for another AAA ball club, this year. And I'm not trying to be disrespectful. I love this team. I've watched them for over 20 years. I even travel sometimes on vacation with my girlfriend, and we went up to Cali, and we caught a couple of Mets games. We supported them. But you know what? They owe it to the fans already. I mean, it's enough. They owe it to the people that sit there, look at the empty seats, pay the hard-earned money, drop the money on food, drop the money on the parking. Honestly, I feel like it's enough is enough, and there's no reason that there should not be a focus on bringing in quality left-handed pitchers, and there's no reason there shouldn't be a focus on bringing in starter. And I honestly just want to get your insight on that. Furthermore, I just want to add really quick that I think the way the fans can really show the Wilpons who's boss is by not showing up to the game. That's it. To continue to make the place an empty, deserted place until they step it up, until they show the fans that they actually care and that they really make a mean to go win. Because it was 2014, now 2015. I'm not trying to be rude, but at this point, I'm frustrated, and I really think the Mets owe it to the fans to step up their game.
Well, you know, first of all, Dave, I can tell you're a passionate fan, and I certainly appreciate that. And, you know, some of what you say, I don't disagree with. I think that for a long time, the product has been of a second-rate variety, and the price and the cost and everything that came with being a Mets fan certainly didn't go down. The passion level on us, the fan side, you know, didn't go anywhere. But, you know, I just kind of don't necessarily look at baseball from that same model as opposed to maybe, you know, for example, Pedro Feliciano, right? A guy who obviously played a significant role for the Mets during the time when they were spending a lot of money and they did have a lot of assets invested in the major league level. And, you know, Scott Rice, even at the tail end of that era, maybe, or during this rebuild, pitched pretty well for the Mets at least one season from the left side. You know, they're not really big name guys, and you know, they were sort of nobodies for the most part before they came to the major league level. Obviously, I think of a guy like Scott Schoenweiss as somebody that they did spend money on, and I think we all remember how that turned out. So I always just say spending money via free agency and, you know, trying to make trades to fit certain needs, it's not always what it's cracked up to be. Because I think from the major league level, from that certain position in the roster, or maybe in this sense, just a special guy, a lefty out in the bullpen, you can figure that out somehow. Now, as far as bringing in another starter, you know, I think that's always fair to say, like, you know, sure, the Mets could have gone out and spent the money on what's his name, Max Scherzer. Obviously the Nationals did that. You know, do you like spending money on guys in free agency that are closer to 30 starting pitchers? You know, in a vacuum, if money was no object, it's all not a concern. But obviously the Mets do have some sort of a payroll. Now, again, you want to talk about ticket prices, parking, concessions, all that. You know, I think we could go back and forth about how we probably argue whether or not that's fair and really right from a consumer, you know, prior whatever standpoint. But that's kind of really a separate issue. And for all I know, Sean Gilmartin could go out there and hold lefties to a 150 batting average. Has he looked good in spring training? Not really. But, you know, that whole lefty specialist thing in a bullpen, I think that's something that you can figure out over time.
And if anything, you know, to be honest, you know, James, I mean, you're bringing some excellent points. But the reason I think that it goes hand in hand, in a sense, is because I think that, you know, they need to consider the fans that are going out and they're basically paying, you know, for this revenue or as far as, you know, what the Mets have to stay afloat. And, you know, for the fans to be continually kicked in the face, I think is wrong. And I get what you're saying, and I get this uncertainty with the you know, people like a Gil Martin or an Alvarez or something like that. But this is where you don't play. I mean, if you're serious about being a contender and you're serious about turning the corner, I think this is where you put the best people in for the job, or at least you put so many people in that, you know, have experience. You go after a guy in the suits. You go after these people. I mean, could they turn out to be a Valverde? 100%. I'm with you on that. But at least shows the fans that you care. And instead of just bringing, you know, minor leaguers in and, okay, let's throw them against the wall and see if they stick. And just that, at this point, I think it would be nice to see the Mets focus more on bringing in people that are more quality and more suited for the position, and not just say, okay, well, somebody went down. Let's see who's up next. No, get somebody in that they can really hold their own and really know how to handle the situation. And honestly, at this point, Orson's done a wonderful job with the minor league system. I will give him that. But I'm just not convinced that he's this big-time GM that's going to go ahead and set the Mets on the right path in the future. And I frankly would like to see another GM come in, somebody that wants to go ahead, spend the money, you know, the Wilpons that finally lift these restraints and give them the opportunity. It's just very frustrating to see them have this future and have to continuously, you know, spin our wheels.
Well, you know, Dave, I understand your frustration. And it's based primarily off the struggles of the last few years. But, you know, I'm just not enamored with the idea of bringing in, you know, Phil Koch, I guess, for example, on a free agent deal or, you know, swinging a trade. You know, picking up Ryan Mattis, again, is fine. But I just don't know that they're necessarily any better than the options that they have. And does it sound, you know, great saying it out loud that it's kind of just, well, we'll figure this out? No, but that's, again, the nature of the specialty lefty in the bullpen is kind of transient like that. And again, the more important bullpen arms, especially when concerning lefties, is Hanner Mejia, Bobby Parnell, Vic Black. Of course, Jerry Rusfamilia, who, all things considered, probably is going to be that, you know, setup guy. So, I mean, you know, it's, of course, it would be nice to have the modern equivalent of, you know, Dennis Cook out there to bring in and shut down every lefty. You know, John Franco says that he's working with this kid, Jack Leathersich. And he thinks he's doing some good things with his two-seamer. And, you know, he's potentially an option. But, you know, it's the second lefty in the bullpen. Now, you know, you're not necessarily thrilled with the – and, Dave, I appreciate the call, buddy. I appreciate you joining the show. You know, maybe the Zach Wheeler situation throws too much of a wrench in the plans for you to handle the implications and not want to lash out at somebody. And I get that. But there's only so much you can do. You can't put these guys' arms in saran wrap. Doesn't work that way. 347-996-3165. 347-996-3165. We go up until 10 o'clock Eastern on Mets on the Air here, presented by SNY. My name is James Flippin, and we'll take a listen to some of this audio here. Courtesy of SNY, it was a conference call that Sandy Alderson gave in response to this Zach Wheeler injury. And by the way, we'll get everybody's calls in, so please feel free. 347-996-3165. But this was what Sandy Alderson said in response to kind of the opening to this phone call and obviously reacting to the, you know, at the time, still pretty surprising news that Zach Wheeler was going to have potentially at that point the surgery for Tommy John, and that he was going to miss the whole year, had a full tear in the UCL. Here's Sandy talking at that point.
The diagnosis is not surprising. I think our your sense of our lack of concern was more of a sort of a realistic understanding that when the elbow is involved, anything can happen. We had been told, you know, Zach was seen at the end of last season. He was seen in November, and he was seen in January. We had been forewarned by the doctors that, you know, his elbow was a concern and that it was going to have to be managed over the course of this season. Wasn't clear that the ligament was involved at that time, but, you know, we understood that that we were going to have to manage his medical condition over the course of the season.
All right, so that's Sandy Alderson talking a little bit about what they didn't know about the injury. Obviously, people at this point seemingly unsatisfied with the way the team has handled this potential for injury. I want to get into the Sports Illustrated article and really kind of, you know, just discuss some of the implications of pitch counts and why I think, again, to reiterate, I don't think it's really relevant. But again, let's take a listen to some more of Sandy Alderson's statement here.
Increased in size. And that's when the MRI was ordered on Saturday and was read this morning by Dr. Olchek in New York. Our release, you know, indicates that it's a preliminary diagnosis, but I think it's only preliminary in the sense that Dr. Olchek has not actually met with Zach and examined him clinically. It's the diagnosis is predicated on the MRI, but according to Dr. Olchek, it's pretty clear cut that he has this problem. He will be traveling to New York probably today or tomorrow for that confirmation. But at this,
so again, Sandy Alderson talking about what we already know with the injury with Zach Wheeler, unfortunately throwing a wrench in the plans for the Mets. But even in 2015, even with the game being depressed in terms of offense, increased in terms of pitching, the depth at the starting level still matters. And here's Sandy expounding a little bit more on exactly what their plans are regarding Wheeler. And he had a little bit of an interesting exchange with Christy Ackert. And, you know, Sandy typically, you know, pretty affable with the media and, you know, not really getting into too much of a testy situation most of the time for the, you know, former attorney. Marine, of course, Sandy Alderson. And here's his exchange that included a little bit of that feisty back and forth with Christy Ackert of the New York Daily News.
I have the the MRI history back to the end of last season. There was an MRI done at the end of last season, I believe, late in September. There was another MRI done in early January, and then this one. Based on what I understand from the doctors, the two previous MRIs showed no ligament involvement. But based on my limited knowledge of this issue medically, when a ligament becomes, the ligament doesn't always show up when it's progressing toward a tear. The ligament doesn't necessarily show up in the MRI. So I guess the short answer is the MRI didn't show any ligament involvement in September or January. And as I said, he was also examined in November, but there was no MRI done at that time.
To ask my question better, I guess, is was there enough concern during the elbow issue last season for an examination, MRI, or anything?
Yeah. I just told you, we had an MRI done at the end of last season, and I don't know what the MRI history was prior to September, but there was no ligament involvement revealed by the MRI at the end of the season in September or in January.
Okay.
So Sandy digging in his heels a little bit, Sandy Alderson, the main voice you heard there, and then Christy Acker to the New York Daily News, on what was a conference call to react to Wheeler's injury. And, you know, again, I've said my piece on all this. I don't see how you could possibly blame the Mets when the truth of it is nobody knows what's going on with this Tommy John stuff. And other than the simple truth that guys are just getting Tommy John more now as opposed to pitching through the pain or trying to rehab and work around it, partial tear, full tear, whatever it may be, I don't know how you can possibly blame the Mets. Sports Illustrated article I mentioned that was talking about, you know, most of the time, you know, you saw Wheeler going out for the seventh inning, he'd already be past 100 pitches, I'm sorry. That maybe there was too much focus on his innings limit as opposed to the pitches per start. I mean, what are we talking about here? It's baseball. It's throwing a baseball. It's a very difficult, very demanding proposition for the physical body. Andy Martino of the Daily News, he said, you know, you can't blame the Mets. That there might, and this is his words, there might be no absolute truths to be found here. No absolute truths. It's all just guessing. Pitchers manage elbow injuries far more than we know, and teams are usually successful in covering it up. You know, that's the thing for me. You see these scouts and trainers and stuff and people talking about that kind of thing. You know, guys pitch with arm injuries. And I don't know if it was, I think it was like 40% said that they tend to have elbow trouble. 40% of pitchers. Let's go through some tweets of the week, shall we? I like to pick out some Mets-related tweets for you in case you guys miss it and you're scrolling, ever-scrolling timeline. For anybody out there who's a Game of Thrones fan, of course, baseball season fast approaching. So is the new Game of Thrones season. Very excited about that. And Mark Healy, at M. Healy Sports, he tweeted out, "Sadly for Mets fans, Joffrey Wilpon survives the reigns of Castamere, or Castorine. Castorine, the former Mets female ticket sales executive. Anyway, he says, hey, it's close enough for the Game of Thrones reference. Molly Knight, at Molly underscore Knight with a K, she says, the Dodgers will average $334 million annually in TV revenue over the next 8 years. Cardinals, St. Louis Cardinals, current deal gives them $25 million a year. Let me say that again. The Dodgers, they'll average $334 million annually. The Cardinals, $25 million. I mean, the crazy thing about baseball is the numbers, the payroll, we've talked about it enough on this show, obviously. It's not a be-all or end-all. But there is a certain level, like kind of what the Dodgers and the Yankees and the Red Sox. Now, it's kind of ironic with the Red Sox because they've had this like up and down pass now since they've really kind of been spending the money. And it's got it has its up and downs. But you do kind of almost become, you know, recession-proof with the amount of money that these guys make. The facts of life. And of course, for the Cardinals, they're recession-proof just because they're freaks of nature when it comes to running an organization. Not that I'm bitter or anything. Okay, my good buddy Joe Giglio, he's at Joe Giglio Sports. Scout to at Ken Rosenthal on Noah Syndergaard. I've never seen a kid that big throw that hard with that control. Let that one sink in a little bit. Good things could still be on the horizon for the Mets starting pitching core this year, and it could come in ways that, you know, you didn't quite expect. Mets on the Air, presented by SNY. If you want to get in on the phone lines before we close up shop for the evening, please feel free. 347-996-3165. That's 347-996-3165. I've got some odds and endies here, and also some odds and endies that my producer, Luke Halpert, sent me on the email connection. So I'll blitz through some of those. I already mentioned this, actually. Jack Leathersich, he's a guy who, as far as a minor leaguer, potentially could fill that lefty specialist role that's now been vacated by Josh Edgins' Tommy John surgery. He is working on a two-seamer, a two-seam fastball with who else? John Franco, obviously a guy who knows a thing or two about being a lefty out of the Mets bullpen. John Franco says this is a guy, Leatherstich, who's in love with the four-seamer, but needs to, you know, put some movement on that fastball, and maybe this guy could really be a weapon. For those of you who don't know about Leatherstich, kind of, you know, history in the minor leagues, he strikes out a lot of guys. He also has control issues, kind of wild, maybe a poor man's Billy Wagner, if you want to look at it that way. So he's certainly a guy that could profile in the Mets bullpen. We'll keep an eye on that as the spring continues. Leaving Metropolis for a second, the Cubs have a minor league team. Now, the last episode we did of Mets on the Air, we said that the Mets, their Brooklyn Cyclones single A affiliate, they're going to wear a Saved by the Bell jersey this year. Well, wouldn't you know it, the Cubs, their minor league affiliate, and forgive me, I don't know which minor league affiliate it is, they're going to wear a Back to the Future jersey, like a Marty McFly puffy vest with the shirt underneath. Anyway, they're getting very creative with these minor league jerseys. Okay, back to odds and endies. Oh, no, I'm sorry. It's actually nothing but... No, I do have an odds and endy. There's a great bit, a great segment that's up on Grantland.com. And if you haven't seen it, do yourself a favor and go check it out. It's all about chronicling the life of Mr. Met. Grantland.com. It's an ESPN video production. Check that out. Became a member of the program there. And interestingly enough, he I guess is friends with Billy Beane or something like that. I don't know. Obviously he's the head coach of Michigan now, but he's got some time off from his recruiting trail to work out there in spring training. All right. Apparently I apologize. I may have cut out for a second there. Appreciate Luke Halpert on the other end of the connection there, getting us back on the air. My apologies. But yeah, I was just saying that Jim Harbaugh, as far as leaving Metropolis here, he was a guest coach with the Oakland Athletics in Arizona for spring training. So good job out of him. John Madden commenting on baseball. John Madden, he's a baseball fan. He doesn't like the Will Ferrell 8 teams in 8 days or whatever it was that Will Ferrell did in kind of being one of those celebrities that takes part in spring training. You know, listen, I don't have a problem with it. You know, spring training is kind of tedious in its own right. It's something that it's almost like a necessary evil, spring training. So, you know, somebody like Will Ferrell goes out there, especially for a great cause like Stand Up to Cancer. I really have a hard time getting on him. You know, John Madden, I guess, legendary football coach, he said it kind of disrespected the game to have somebody out there like that. Now I can't think of it. Some baseball player wanted to go suit up and wear some football pads for a practice or something. Madden's like, you know, kill this guy and get out on the field. You know, that's an old school mentality that I certainly respect. But when it comes to, you know, doing something like stand up to cancer, I think that's really a worthwhile cause. All right. Apologies for any sort of audio issues we're having. I don't know. Luke says we're having some audio issues. My apologies. But plowing right through to the end. Unfortunately, Dontrell Willis, D-Train, he's announced his retirement. Never really panned out from the beginning to the career that he once had. Dontrell Willis struggled, obviously, with control issues and injury concerns. And, you know, after he petered out with the Marlins and then got traded, obviously, to the Tigers, never really came back to the pitcher that he once was. But it was fun while it lasted, Dontrell. Even, you know, he was one of those guys that was so good and so interesting and pitched with such a kind of passion for the game and was such a good story that you rooted for him even though he was on the opposition. And I definitely, you know, despise those Marlins teams. Don't get me wrong. But that's one that, you know, it's kind of unfortunate in a way that Dontrell Willis's career didn't pan out. Okay, Pete Rose, he's made a formal request. Obviously, the all-time hits leader, Pete Rose, made a formal request to new Major League Baseball commissioner Rob Manfred to lift his and Rob Manfred said that he's going to consider this. Now, you know, there's always been a difference of opinion in some circles about Pete Rose. Most of the people I talk to, frankly, you know, feel he should be in the Hall of Fame and say, look, at the guy, the way the guy played the game, you know, it's almost separate and not even part and parcel to the way he managed or, you know, if he did bet on his team, if he didn't, you know, I maybe sort of naively believe that he didn't bet on his own team except to win. You know, again, maybe that's naive, but I just kind of, you know, at this point think that enough time has passed. And, you know, it's kind of funny to me. They talk on all the talk shows like, well, you know, is this right? Because, you know, Pete Rose, if he gets brought back, you know, then he's going to be an option to manage. And do we really, I mean, come on. No one is hiring Pete Rose to manage. I mean, that's just not going to happen. So, all right, recapping the evening here on Mets on the Air, and appreciate everybody involved for a great radio program once again. It's the post-Tommy John era, or the Tommy John era, I guess. And few teams more than the Mets at this point. You know, like I said, over the last 10 years, the Mets have the third most Tommy John injuries of any team. And only the Atlanta Braves and the Texas Rangers are ahead of them. So, you know, the Atlanta Braves in our own division here are certainly no stranger to the effects of Tommy John surgery and, you know, how that's really kind of blitzed through the game here. But the Mets have the horses, albeit with a little bit less experience and potentially less talent, to get through this season here. And, you know, once upon a time, that's not necessarily the case for this organization. And it's not to downplay the loss of Wheeler. It's not to say that it's not a problem. It is. But, you know, it's something I think the team can bounce back from. Our last cut of the evening, our last audio bit, this is from Sandy Alderson again, and he's talking about what kind of a loss this is for the team.
It's a blow, but at the same time, we knew it was going to be, there would be a lot of uncertainty surrounding Zach and his elbow over the course of the season. We're obviously not happy he won't be with us, but I think if there's a silver lining is that we now have some certainty and we know that, you know, we have a solution for this, and that, you know, he won't have to manage the kind of pain that I think he had to manage over the course of last season, and ultimately, you know, doing that over a career is just simply unsustainable. So, you know, although we're really unhappy that we're not going to have him this season, in some ways this will maybe you know, long term, very beneficial to Zach and to the Mets as well.
To listen to more Mets audio content, subscribe to SNY.TV Mets podcast channel on iTunes. Search SNY.TV Mets and you'll have access to Mostly Mets, hosted by Toby Hyde and Robert Brender. In addition, Matt Cerrone's Mets blog Q&A cast and all kinds of audio like you just heard from Sandy Alderson, the Mets GM. Mets on the Air is presented by SNY. My name is James Flippin. You can follow me on Twitter at James_Flippin. Appreciate my producer, Luke Halpert, who sent me some good odds and endies. He also screened the phone calls. We're live every Wednesday from 9 to 10 and we take your calls at 347-996-3165. So join us next time. Until then, let's go Mets. And don't worry, everybody. Mets will be okay without Zach Wheeler. Makes the season that much more interesting. Good night, everybody.